Felicity snapped out of her reverie and said decisively, "Mr. Bing, this rug isn't for sale, but there are some items that we could offer with the house." "All right, then. Oliver, could you make an assessment of how much everything is worth? I'll take whatever chuanjia bao these nice ladies will let me have," Jack said, turning to the young sisters with a little smile. "Of course," Oliver said. "Ladies, I approve of this house, and I think my family will be very happy using it whenever we visit Singapore. Thank you for showing us around this morning, and please, this is a standing offer, so take your time to decide. I know this must not be an easy decision for all of you," Jack said. He then strolled out the front doors, flicked his cigar onto the gravel driveway, and got into the back of the first black Audi SUV. Kitty climbed in after him. The bodyguards got into their SUVs, and the convoy of cars zoomed off. "Well, that was excruciating," Victoria said as they sank into the sofas in the drawing room. "Oliver, where on earth did you ever dig up these people?" Felicity asked contemptuously.
"Believe it or not, they're far from the worst. Jack has become quite an astute art collector. They have one of the top private museums in Shanghai, and Kitty's taste has actually matured. Plus, she's willing to learn."
"Don't worry. They won't do anything to the house without my approval." Victoria looked up in surprise to see Nick and Rachel entering the drawing room.
"I didn't realize you two were home.
Why didn't you come out and meet these people? Rachel, we could have used another Chinese translator." Nick plopped down on one of the Art Deco Club chairs.
"Oh, I've met them before. I met Jack in Shanghai a couple of years ago, and had hoped never to meet him again. And his wife we all met when she came for Colin's wedding."
"Wait a minute. That woman was at Colin Koo's wedding?"
Felicity looked taken aback.
"Auntie Felicity, she was at your house. She used to be Alistair's girlfriend," Nick said irritatedly.
"Good grief, that was her? The one with the big brown cow nipples? Pussy Ping or whatever her name was,"
Alex blurted out.
"Her name is Kitty Pong," Rachel said. "Dear me, I didn't recognize her at all. She has a completely new face. No wonder Alistair suddenly flew back to Hong Kong first thing this morning. But I thought she was married to that ghastly boy, Carol Tai's good-for-nothing son? The one that butchered his face with plastic surgery, too?"
Alex said.
"That was ages ago, Auntie Alex. Kitty's traded up."
"She most certainly has. I actually quite liked her pretty floral dress today." "Why, she didn't look very vulgar at all," Victoria noted.
"It's impossible to look vulgar in Dries Van Noten," Oliver declared. "So you really want to sell the house to them?" Nick asked gruffly.
"Nicky, you tell me how we can say no to $10 billion? That's 3 times more than our top offer. It would be pure stupidity to refuse this kind of money,"
Felicity reasoned. Oliver nodded.
"It would be looking a gift horse in the mouth."
Nick glanced over at Oliver in annoyance.
"That's easy for you to say. You didn't grow up in this house. For some of us, it's not just about the money."
Oliver sighed.
"Look, Nicky, I know you're upset with me, but I really didn't mean for any of this to hurt you. I loved your grandmother, and I love this house more than you can possibly imagine. I thought you wanted to preserve Tyersall Park, and when I heard that the Bings were on the lookout for a new place in Singapore, I just put 2 and 2 together. These people love the house, and they're committed to maintaining its architectural integrity. And they actually have the kind of money it takes to restore the house and keep the estate in tip-top condition for generations to come."
Rachel spoke up. "Do those generations include Colette Bing?" Oliver's face flushed red, while Felicity asked,
"Who's Colette Bing?"
"Colette Bing is Jack's daughter. 2 years ago, her personal assistant, Roxanne, tried to poison Rachel on Colette's behalf,"
Nick answered sharply.
"What?"
Felicity and Victoria shrieked in horror.
Oh, my goodness, I had completely forgotten that this was that family,
Alex moaned, putting her hands to her face. Rachel, that was such an unfortunate incident, but you should know that Jack and Kitty have absolutely nothing to do with Colette anymore, Oliver said. Nick's face flashed with anger. It wasn't an unfortunate incident. My wife almost died. Just how much do you stand to make on this deal, Oliver? Aside from your commission on the sale, which will be in the millions, how much will you and that auction house of yours be making selling new stuff to these eager Bings? Oliver got up from the divan and smiled apologetically. You know, I think I will leave you all now. I can see that I've frayed a few nerves. The offer's on the table, and I look forward to hearing your response. As soon as Oliver had left the room, Victoria spoke up.
You know, I've been thinking. There is something to all this that's just been so serendipitous, so impossible to believe. This has to be a sign. Nikki, this incredible offer from the Bings. I think part of it is because they are atoning for what happened to Rachel. I think this is all Mummy's work. She is looking out for us from heaven.
Nick rolled his eyes in frustration.
It is hard to believe that anyone would pay this much over the market value for Tyersall Park, Alex began. Mummy had it planned all along. She knew we wouldn't be getting any money from the Shang Trust, and so she wanted us all to get the most money possible out of Tyersall Park. That's why she split it up like she did. And now she's working a miracle for us.
Victoria's voice brimmed with conviction. Nick suddenly stood up and looked at his aunties. Look, you can tell yourself any story you want if it helps you to sleep at night. Personally, I can't stand the idea of this house going to the family that almost killed my wife. I don't think we can trust them to keep their word about preserving the house. I can tell that Kitty's just waiting to get her claws into redesigning it from top to bottom. But if I can match Jack's offer, will you sell it to me? Rachel looked at him in surprise, while Alex answered,
Nikki, don't be silly. It would be absurd for you to buy this house at that price. We couldn't let you do that.
You didn't answer my question. If I can get us $10 billion, do we have a deal? The aunties looked at one another.
Okay. We will give you 1 month.
Felicity finally relented. Chapter 17 Sentosa Island, Singapore. Twice a year, the Acquisitions Board of the Singapore Museum of Modern Art convened to go over potential new purchases for the permanent collection. The exclusive board was composed of the city's young elite collectors, mostly descended from the country's most powerful families. As with most entitled scions, it simply wouldn't do for them to actually have to perform their duties at the museum's perfectly nice but rather ordinary offices. So some new fabulous location with celebrity chef-prepared cuisine was always selected for the acquisitions board meetings. Today, the meeting took place over breakfast at the Capella on Sentosa, the island playground off Singapore's southern coast. When the museum's curator, Philip Su, arrived at the gorgeous reception room overlooking a beautiful tiered infinity pool, he found the atmosphere positively buzzing among the dozen or so members that had already assembled.
I couldn't believe it. Absolutely couldn't believe it.
Lauren Lee Leung, the wife of Roderick Leung of the Leung Finance Leungs and a granddaughter of Mrs. Lee Yong Chen, whispered in a corner to Sarita Singh, former Bollywood actress and daughter-in-law of Gayatri Singh.
How can you possibly recover from something like that?
Sarita shook her head as she fingered the mother-of-pearl medallions on her Van Cleef and Arpels necklace as if they were rosary beads.
Well, the one consolation is that her tits did look great. I wonder if she's had them lifted,
Lauren said as she shielded her mouth with her VBH clutch. Philippe strode over to the buffet to help himself to two soft-boiled eggs and some toast points. Patricia Lim, of the Lim Rubber Limbs, who was standing next to him trying to decide between Eggs Benedict or Eggs Norwegian, gave him a look.
What a morning, huh?
Yes, it seems like everyone's caffeinated and ready to go. Good, good. We have quite a long agenda today.
Are you thinking of making any sort of announcement, or do you plan to maintain a dignified silence?
I'm not sure what you're referring to, Pat, the curator frowned.
Don't play dumb with me, Philippe.
Oh, dear Lord. She's actually here!
The room went dead silent as Astrid entered. She said hi to her cousin Sophie Koo of the Koo Enterprises Koos.
Sophie is the sister of Colin Koo, and they are cousins to Astrid through their late mother, who was Harry Leong's sister. Yes, Singapore is a very small world, and even smaller within the high net worth crowd.
Grabbed a pan au chocolat from the buffet and sat down at the head of the long marble table as everyone took their places. Then she stood up abruptly.
Good morning, everyone. Before we dive headlong into our agenda, I have a confession to make.
Most of the board members gasped audibly as they stared wide-eyed at Astrid.
When it comes to Anish Kapoor, I am totally biased. I have loved his work for many years now, and as you probably know, I owned several of his pieces, and yes, I was the anonymous donor who helped to fund the new installation in Antwerp. So we will be examining two new artworks from him for possible acquisition, and I will recuse myself from that vote.
Astrid smiled at everyone and sat down again.
Unfucking believable,
Lauren Lee muttered under her breath. Sarita Singh tapped on her coffee mug with her spoon, and everyone looked at her as she spoke up in a righteous tone.
I was expecting our chairwoman to humbly announce her resignation. But since she has shown no intention of doing that, I'd like to start a motion for Astrid Leong's immediate removal from the acquisitions board.
Astrid stared at Sarita in shock.
I second that motion,
Lauren Lee immediately said.
What the hell?
Philippe blurted out, his mouth still full of soft-boiled eggs, as the room erupted in commotion.
Sarita, why are you suddenly suggesting this motion?
Astrid asked.
Astrid, let's be perfectly honest here. We're going to lose funding now because of your actions. The entire museum's reputation is going to be affected because of you. I can't even believe you dared to show up here this morning.
I'm really not following. Is this because of my divorce?
Astrid asked, trying to remain gracious and calm.
From the other end of the table, Sophie Koo stood up and ran over to Astrid's side.
Come with me now,
she whispered, taking hold of her arm.
Astrid stood up and followed Sophie out of the room.
What is going on in there?
She asked, absolutely bewildered.
Astrid, it just became apparent to me that you don't even know yet.
Know what?
Sophie closed her eyes for a moment and inhaled.
There is a video of you that leaked late last night. It's gone viral.
A video?
Astrid still didn't catch on.
Yes, of you with Charlie Wu.
All the color drained from Astrid's face.
Oh, my God.
I'm so sorry, Sophie began.
Astrid stood stock still for a moment, and then she snapped into crisis management mode.
I need to go. I need to get Cassian out of school. Please tell them I needed to go,
Astrid said as she made a run for her car. As Astrid sped along the Sentosa Gateway, heading back to Singapore, she found herself unusually calm and collected. She tried ringing Charlie from her Bluetooth, but his cell kept going straight to voicemail. Finally, she left a message.
Charlie, I suspect you've already heard about the video leak since you're not answering. I just found out minutes ago. I'm fine. Don't worry. I'm on my way to ACS now to get Cassian. I would suggest doing the same for Chloe and Delphine. If they haven't found out already, it's better coming from us than from some classmate. You know how kids can be. I'll talk to you soon.
The minute Astrid ended the call, her phone started ringing again.
Charlie?
There was a brief silence on the other end, and then a screeching voice filled her car.
Oh my God, you are still talking to that horrible pervert!
I can't believe you.
It was her mother.
Mum, please calm down.
A sex tape? Oh, my God. In my worst nightmare, I never imagined I would ever hear those words uttered about one of my children. I just got home from showing Tarsal Park to some dreadful Chinese people, and now I hear this news from Cassandra Shang?
Your father is so angry. I'm worried he's going to drop dead of a heart attack.
Felicity cried. Astrid couldn't help but notice how her mother always managed to sob hysterically, scold, and guilt-trip her simultaneously.
Mother, we did nothing wrong. Michael secretly videotaped us in the privacy of Charlie's home, and now he's leaked the video everywhere. This is a crime, Mum.
The crime is you sleeping with Charlie in the first place.
How's that a crime?
You're a harlot. Your reputation has gone down the toilet, and you're branded for life now.
Did you even see the video? It's 10 seconds of grainy footage. Oh, my God. If I were to actually see the video, I think I would instantly go blind.
How could you have slept with that man when you're not even married to him?
This is God punishing you.
I'm sorry. I've had sex before marriage, okay? And I've had sex with Charlie, who, by the way, I was having sex with the first time he was my fiancé over a decade ago.
The two of you have brought nothing but disgrace onto us.
You have disgraced your father and me, and you have disgraced your family for generations.
And you have ruined poor Cassian's life. How will he ever show his face at ACS again?
I'm on my way to get Cassian now.
We already got him. Ludovine just collected him from school and is bringing him over here.
Oh, good. I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Absolutely not!
What are you thinking? We don't want you anywhere near this house.
Stop being ridiculous, Mom.
Ridiculous?
I don't know how I'm ever going to recover from this. You need to leave Singapore and not come back until things blow over.
Don't you realize what this scandal has done to your father's reputation?
Good grief. This might affect the next election. This might throw the sale of Tyersall Park into jeopardy. My God, the price might come tumbling down.
I can feel my blood pressure skyrocketing now. Oh, my goodness. I need my pills.
Sunali, where are my pills?
Felicity shrieked to one of her maids.
Calm down, Mom. I don't see how this has anything to do with Tyersall Park.
How can you not see it?
You have tainted the family legacy. Do not come over to Nassim Road. Do you understand? Your father does not want to see your face. He says you are dead to him.
Astrid felt winded for a few moments, overwhelmed by her mother's attack. Thankfully, her phone beeped, and Charlie's number flashed on the screen.
Okay, Mom. Don't worry. I'm not coming over. I'm not going to shame you for one moment longer, she said, switching over to Charlie.
There was a short pause, and then Charlie's voice came through.
Astrid, are you okay?
Yes.
Thank God it's you,
Astrid said with a heavy sigh.
Are you driving?
Yes, I was on the way to get Cassian out of school, but...
Can you find some place to pull over?
Charlie's voice sounded strange.
Sure. I just got to Tanglin Road. Let me pull over into this Esso right here.
Astrid parked in the gas station and relaxed into her seat.
Okay. I'm parked.
Good. Good. First of all, are you okay?
Charlie asked.
Well, my mom just screamed at me in a way I've never heard before and ordered me to leave the country. Otherwise, life is peachy.
How has your day been so far?
I'm not sure how to tell you this, Astrid,
Charlie said in a shaky voice.
Let me guess. You found out why Michael leaked the video?
Actually, Michael didn't leak it.
He didn't?
No.
It was Isabel.
Isabel? How did she even get the video?
We're not sure. We're still trying to piece it all together. But the video came from her phone. She posted it to the gossip blog.
Why on earth would she do that?
She had another psychotic episode, Astrid. And this time, she tried to hang herself.
She what?
Astrid found herself going numb. She tried hanging herself in our new house, on the dining room chandelier. She wanted to curse the house and curse our marriage forever.
So, what happened?
Astrid barely got the words out. The chandelier broke, and that saved her. But now she's on life support. She's in a coma, and they don't know if she'll ever come out of it,
Charlie said, his voice cracking in grief.
No. 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 No.
Astrid cried, breaking down into uncontrollable sobs. Part 4. I often think how unfairly life's good fortune is sometimes distributed. Leo Tolstoy, War and Peace.
What's a soup kitchen?
Paris Hilton. 4 days after Isabel's suicide attempt, an exclusive story broke in the Daily Post. Heiress drives rival to suicide attempt after sex video leak. The gorgeous Singaporean heiress Astrid Leong's sensational $5 billion divorce from venture capitalist Michael Teo continues to pile up collateral damage. The latest victim is Isabel Wu, the ex-wife of Astrid's current boyfriend, tech billionaire Charles Wu. Apparently, an explicit video of Miss Leong in bed with Mr. Wu sent Mrs. Wu into an emotional tailspin. And after leaking the video to a popular Chinese gossip blog, Mrs. Wu tried to hang herself at the spectacular new Tom Kundig-designed mansion that her ex-husband has been building in Shek O. Isabel has been in a coma at Hong Kong Sanatorium for over a week, where sources say there had been a concerted attempt by Mr. Wu to keep the tragedy under wraps. But Isabel's mother, the Honorable Madam Justice Deirdre Lai, demands a further investigation into her daughter's suicide attempt. Charlie and Astrid are responsible, and I want the world to know what they have done to my daughter, sobbed the Hong Kong High Court judge. The scandal has become the talk of Asia, splitting Hong Kong society as friends and family take opposing sides. An insider on Team Charlie says, Isabel has been suffering from mental health issues for over 2 decades. The footage in question was secretly recorded long after Isabel and Charlie's marriage fell apart, and Isabel leaked it while she was suffering from a manic episode. Charlie and Astrid are the real victims here. Nonsense, counters an insider from Team Isabel. Izzy was devastated by this video. It was recorded while Isabel and Charlie were happily married, and it really put her over the edge to learn just how long their affair had been going on. Deirdre Lai says, My poor granddaughters, Chloe and Delphine, first they have a porn star for a father, and now they might lose their mother. Can you believe that after all this, that dirty woman dared to show up at the hospital where my poor daughter lies in a coma? The Daily Post tried to contact Ms. Leong for a comment, but since her appearance at Hong Kong Sanatorium, Ms. Leong has seemingly vanished. When we contacted her family's company, Leong Holdings, for comment, spokeswoman Zoe Kwan said, Astrid Leong has no functioning role in this company, and we have no comment. When we inquired as to Astrid's whereabouts, Ms. Kwan hurriedly barked, No idea, la. She's out of the country for an indefinite period. Chapter 1 Place de Fürstenberg, Paris. Scheherazade padded into the gleaming, state-of-the-art kitchen of her apartment in Saint-Germain, lifted the lid from her frying pan, and put a finger on the crust. Not ready yet. She put the lid over the pan again, went back into her dressing room, and took off a sheer ruffled Del Pozzo blouse. She had just returned from a party at the loft of a fashion photography couple, where the former pastry chef at Noma had cooked up the most elaborate feast ever. But all through the dinner, Scheherazade only dreamed of getting back to her place, heating up some 2-day-old pizza in her frying pan. Truly, the best way to heat up 2-day-old pizza. The crust gets crispy and the cheese gets cheesy if you leave a lid on for a minute at the end.
opening a bottle of red wine and catching up on The Walking Dead. Changing into her pajamas, she brought the plate of pizza into her living room, sank down into her gray suede sofa, turned on her television, and selected the latest episode. As her favorite show began to play, the dialogue was suddenly drowned out by the sound of muffled music outside her window. Scheherazade turned up the volume on her TV, hoping to drown out the noise, but it only got louder. Cars started honking on the street, and a neighbor could be heard screaming out his window. Getting annoyed, Scheherazade paused the show, walked over to her balcony, and opened the glass-paned doors. Suddenly, the full force of the music flooded her ears, and as Scheherazade peered over her railing, she saw the most curious sight. Carlton Bao was standing on the roof of a Range Rover parked outside her building, holding up a boombox that was blasting Peter Gabriel's In Your Eyes.
"Carlton, what the hell are you doing?"
Scheherazade shouted down at him, absolutely mortified.
"I'm trying to get your attention," Carlton shouted back. "What do you want?" "I want you to listen to me. I want you to know that I'm not some reckless killer. The only thing I'm guilty of is falling."
"What? Turn down the music. I can't hear you."
Carlton refused to turn down the music, but yelled louder.
"I said, the only thing I'm guilty of is falling in love with you."
At that moment, four bodyguards dressed in civilian clothes suddenly grabbed him by the legs, yanked him off the car, and body-tackled him onto the ground.
"Oh, fuck!"
Scheherazade started giggling. She ran out the door, down four flights of stairs, and out the front door.
"Get off him!"
she told the security guards that were now standing over Carlton.
"Miss Shang, are you sure?"
"Yes, I'm sure. He's fine. He's with me,"
Scheherazade insisted. The beefiest guard reluctantly released his knee from Carlton's back, and when Carlton got off the ground, Scheherazade saw that the left side of his face was all cut up from the asphalt.
"Oh, no. Come upstairs. Let's get some disinfectant on that,"
Scheherazade said. As they entered her building and rode up in the ornate wrought iron elevator, she looked him over again.
"What did you think you were doing?"
"That was my wildly romantic gesture."
Scheherazade frowned. "That was supposed to be romantic?"
"I was doing my best John Cusack impersonation."
"Who?"
"You know. Say anything."
"Say what?"
"You haven't seen the movie, have you?"
Carlton said, suddenly crestfallen.
"No. But you did look cute standing on top of that car,"
Scheherazade said, pulling him in for a kiss. At the other end of Paris, Charlie was walking back to the Hotel George V after a very frustrating dinner with Astrid's old friend, Grégoire Lemay-Pierre. Grégoire had been more charming than usual, and Charlie suspected that he knew far more about Astrid's whereabouts than he let on. She had been in Paris for probably 3 days, Grégoire surmised, and then she was gone.
"No, she hadn't seemed distraught. I just assumed she was making her usual semi-annual trip to the city for her couture fittings."
Over the past 2 weeks, Charlie had crisscrossed the globe frantically searching for Astrid. Mad with worry, he had started in Singapore, then Paris and London, going to all their familiar haunts and speaking with all her friends. He then headed down to Venice to see if she was hiding out in her friend Domiala Finzi Contini's palazzo. But Domi, like so many of Astrid's friends, remained as silent as the Sphinx.
"I haven't heard a peep from Astrid, but then I've been in Ferrara for the past month. We always spend the winter in Ferrara."
"No, I didn't hear about the scandal at all."
Now he was back in Paris, trying to retrace her steps, trying to understand how she could have abandoned her entire life, and how her family didn't seem to care that she had been missing for the past month. Entering the hotel, he went to the reception desk to see if there had been any messages.
"No, monsieur, nothing for you tonight."
Charlie went up to his suite and opened the doors to the balcony, letting in some fresh cold air. The cold air kept him on his toes, helped him to think clearly. Paris had been a dud. She had been here, but she clearly wasn't coming back. He should try Los Angeles next.
Even though her brother Alex had assured him she wasn't there, he was still suspicious. His entire security team and all the private investigators he had hired had been poring over everything since day one. Astrid had been meticulous. She hadn't left any sort of paper trail, no bank transfers, no credit card charges in more than 5 weeks. Someone had to be helping her. Someone close. He stepped out onto the balcony and leaned against the railing, gazing at the soft golden glow that always seemed to hover over Paris at night. The city, breathtakingly lovely as always, suddenly seemed so lonely. He should never have let her come to Hong Kong. She had insisted on coming, wanting to help him through his crisis. But when she saw Isabel in the ICU, hooked up to all those machines, he knew she was trying to be strong for him, for the girls. But he could see that it just devastated her. And then when Isabel's mother saw Astrid at the hospital, she went berserk, and that's when she gave the whole story to the Daily Post, breaking the scandal wide open. It was all his fault. His stupid damn fault. Charlie went back into the suite and sat down on the bed. He opened the drawer beside the bed and took out a small brown padded envelope. It was an envelope that had been mailed to him in Hong Kong from this very hotel a few weeks ago. And inside was a box containing the engagement ring he had given Astrid, along with a handwritten note that he had now read hundreds of times.
Dear Charlie, I've been doing a great deal of thinking over the past days. Ever since I came back into your life 5 years ago, I've only caused you heartache. I dragged you into my problems with Michael. I dragged you into my horrendous divorce. And now I have dragged you and your daughters into an unthinkable tragedy. Chloe and Delphine almost lost their mother, and I'm the only one to blame. I feel like no matter how hard I try, nothing I do ever leads to anything good. And so the best I can think to do is to simply go away, so that no more damage can be done. I don't think I will ever be fit to be your wife, and I can only hope and pray that you and your family will in time be able to find happiness and peace again. Yours truly, Astrid. P.S. Please give this ring to my cousin Nicky when you Nicks have the chance. He should have it for Rachel. Charlie put down the note and reclined on the bed, staring up at the ceiling. Astrid had been lying on this very bed, probably staring at the same view. It was her favorite suite at the George Five, and he had been the one to introduce her to it the first time he brought her to Paris back in their university days. It seemed like a lifetime ago, and he wished he could just go back to that time and do everything differently. Charlie rolled over and buried his face in the pillow, inhaling deeply. He thought that if he breathed deep enough, maybe her scent would return. Chapter 2. Tyersall Park, Singapore. Rachel was walking through the rose garden, looking at the fresh new blooms and inhaling their deep, intoxicating scent when Nick returned. He had been to see Alfred Chang in the hope of raising enough money to buy Tyersall Park from his aunts. "How did it go?" she asked as he entered the garden, although from the look on his face, she already knew the answer. "I walked him through the entire proposal, thinking he would at least throw me some kind of bone, since Tyersall Park had been his father's estate. Do you know what he told me? He thinks that we're in the midst of another financial bubble waiting to burst, and when that implodes, all of the property markets in Asia will collapse. He said, if this idiot really wants to give you $10 billion for Tyersall Park, you would be an even bigger idiot not to take it. Take his money and go buy some gold. It's the only asset worth keeping in the long run. Nick leaned into one of the rose bushes and said, "This is maybe the third time I've actually stood here and smelt the roses. It's funny how one takes things for granted when they've always been around." "We'll plant our own rose garden," Rachel said encouragingly,
I think we can afford a little country house now, don't you think? Maybe in Vermont, or even in Maine. I hear North Haven is beautiful.
I don't know, Rachel. With $4 billion, it's going to be tough finding something out there. Nick deadpanned.
Rachel smiled. It was still impossible for her to fathom that kind of money coming into her life, especially since Nick had just spent the past month desperately trying to raise funds and not getting anywhere close to what he needed. Now that the deadline was up and his last-ditch effort with Uncle Alfred had failed, Nick had no choice but to give in to his aunt's demands. Picking a beautiful blossom that was dangling from a half-broken stem, Rachel looked up at Nick.
Shall we go in?
Yes, let's do this. Nick took her hand and they walked up the stone steps into the house, where Nick's aunts sat pensively around a table in the library. Alex looked up at him.
Are we ready to make the call?
Nick nodded, and Felicity picked up the telephone in the middle of the table and dialed Oliver's number.
Hiya! It's his international cell phone. Now we'll have to pay the long-distance rates,
Felicity grumbled. The phone rang a number of times before Oliver picked up.
Oliver, can you hear us? We have you on speakerphone here,
Alex shouted into the phone.
Yes, yes, you can lower your voice. I can hear you just fine. Where are you right now, Oliver?
I'm back in London at the moment.
Ah, how lovely. How's the weather today? Hiya, gong chong hei.
Cantonese for so long-winded.
Let's just get on with it, Alex, Victoria scolded. Oh, okay. I'll let Nicky speak, since he's technically the majority shareholder, Alex said.
Hi, Oliver. Yes, I just wanted to inform you that we've reached a consensus. Nick paused for a moment, took a breath, and then continued. We're ready to take Jack Bing's offer of $10 billion for Tyersall Park.
Okay. And I'm accepting on their behalf. We have a deal,
Oliver replied. Felicity leaned in.
And Oliver, we'd like your expertise on valuing the furniture. We'll sell him most of the furniture and objects in the house, with the exception of a few things that we wish to keep.
He's not getting Mummy's Battingberg lace doilies, that's for sure,
Victoria muttered under her breath.
Super! The Bings will be thrilled. And I know it hasn't been easy for all of you to reach this decision. But I can tell you that you have made a superb deal. This is a record-breaking amount for real estate, and I don't think you would have realized a price like this from anyone else on the planet. Great Aunt Sui would have been pleased.
Nick rolled his eyes while Victoria and Alex nodded.
You'll let them know, Oliver?
Felicity asked.
Of course. I will call Jack right after we get off the phone, and then I'll email Freddie Tan to begin drawing up the contract.
Okay, then. Goodbye. Nick turned off the speakerphone. The ladies sighed collectively.
It's done,
Felicity muttered, as though she had just drowned a litter of puppies.
It was the right thing to do. $10 billion. Mummy would be so proud of us,
Alex said, dabbing her eyes with a rolled-up tissue. Felicity looked at her sister, wondering if what she said was true. Would her mother ever be proud of her? Nick got up from the table and walked out the French doors into the garden again. Rachel was about to go after him when Alex placed a hand on her arm.
He'll be fine, she said to Rachel.
I know he will,
Rachel said softly.
I just put $4 billion into his pocket and that fucker didn't even thank me,
Oliver thought after Nick had abruptly hung up. Then he picked up his phone again and called Kitty's cell phone.
Kitty, it's done. The Youngs have accepted the offer.
Yes.
Really?
No, no, you can't move in next week. It's going to take a few months at the very least to get the deal done.
Yes. They will sell some of the furnishings.
Of course I will tell you what's worth acquiring. Don't worry.
I don't think we can pay them more to move out tomorrow.
This has been a home to the family for more than a century, Kitty. They need some time to get things sorted and dismantle the estate. The silver lining is that you'll have time to plan the new interiors. Henrietta Spencer Churchill? Yes, I do know her. But Kitty, why would you want the same designer who's already doing Colette's new house? I know she's related to Princess Diana, but I have an even better idea. I can only think of one person in the whole world I would trust with a redo of Tyersall Park. Can you meet me in Europe next week? No, not Paris. We're going to Antwerp, Kitty. No, it's not in Austria. Antwerp is a city in Belgium. Oh, you'll swing by London to pick me up? How awfully kind of you. Perfect. Look forward to it. Oliver hung up the phone and stared into his computer screen for a few minutes. Then he clicked on iTunes and scrolled through his albums until he found a song. He clicked play, and Puccini's Nessun Dorma came blasting on. The Pavarotti version, of course. Oliver sat in his chair and listened to the first few verses of the aria. As it reached the crescendo, Oliver suddenly leapt out of his chair and started dancing madly around his flat. It was a wild, Dionysian release, and then he collapsed on the floor and started sobbing. He was safe, safe at last. With the commission earned on the sale of Tyersall Park, the long nightmare of the past 2 decades was finally over. His 1.5% commission on the Tyersall Park sale would garner $150 million, enough to pay off all his student loans and his parents' crushing debts. They wouldn't be rich, but at least they would have enough to survive. His family could be restored to a proper level of respectability again. He would never, ever have to fly economy again. As Oliver lay on the carpet of his London flat, staring up at the cracked plasterwork on the ceiling that had needed fixing 10 years ago, he cried out in joy.
Alba! Vincero! Vincero! Vincero!
Chapter 3. The Peninsula Hotel, Los Angeles.
It's as baffling to me as it is to you, Alex Long said, stirring the ice cubes in his scotch glass with his finger. Astrid's never left Cassian for this long a period before. I can't imagine what's going through her mind.
From his chair on the rooftop bar, Charlie gazed out at the palm trees that seemed to line every street in Beverly Hills. He didn't know if Astrid's brother was truly sincere or putting on a performance, especially since he knew that Alex, long estranged from his parents, was especially close to Astrid. Trying a different tactic, Charlie said, I'm worried Astrid has had some sort of breakdown, and she's unable to get help. She's been MIA for 5 weeks now. You'd think your parents would be the least bit concerned. Alex jerked his head indignantly, his Persol sunglasses reflecting against the sun. I am the last person to answer this question, since I haven't spoken to my father in years. But surely you know them well enough to know how they might react? Charlie pressed on.
I was always the black sheep of the family, so I suppose I was more prepared when my parents took out the knives. But Astrid has always been the darling princess. She's been raised her whole life to be absolutely perfect, to never put a wrong foot forward, so it must have really hit her hard when things didn't go so perfectly. Astrid's scandal makes me look like a saint at this point. I can't begin to imagine how they must have reacted, the things they must have said. She did tell me that her parents ordered her to go into hiding. But if they adore Astrid as much as I know they do, I don't understand how they could be so cold-hearted. I mean, she's done absolutely nothing wrong. None of this was her fault, Charlie tried to reason.
Alex leaned back in his chair and grabbed a fistful of wasabi peas from the little bowl on the table.
The thing you have to understand about my parents is that the only thing that matters to them is their reputation. They care about appearances more than anything else in life. My father has spent his whole life crafting his legacy, being the elder statesman and all that shit. And my mum just cares that she's the queen bee of the establishment crowd. So everything in their world has to be according to their exacting standards. They excommunicated me for defying their wishes and marrying a girl whose skin tone was just one shade too dark for them. I still can't believe they disowned you for marrying Salima. She's a Cambridge-educated pediatrician, for God's sake, Charlie exclaimed. How accomplished she was didn't matter to them one bit. I'll never forget what my father said to me when I told him I was marrying her with or without his blessing. He said, "If you don't care about your own future, think of the children you will have with that woman. For 11 generations, the blood will never be pure." And that's the last conversation I ever had with my father.
Unbelievable. Charlie shook his head.
Were you surprised that he harbored those feelings? Not really. My parents have always been racist and elitist to the extreme, like so many in their crowd. Peel away the veneer of wealth and sophistication, and you'll find extremely provincial, narrow-minded people. The problem is that they all have too much money, and it's come so easily to them that they think they're bloody geniuses, and so they are always right. Charlie laughed as he took a swig of his beer. I'm lucky, I guess. My father always told me I was an idiot who was wrong about everything. By sheer dumb luck, my father was born in the right place at the right moment in time, when the whole region was going through enormous, unprecedented growth. And oh yeah, he also inherited an empire that had already been set up four generations before him. I think he looks down on people like your father, people who are self-made, because at the heart of it, he is a deeply insecure individual. He knows he did absolutely nothing to deserve his fortune, and so the only thing he can do is disparage others who have the audacity to make their own money. His friends are all the same. They are frightened of the new money that's rolling in, and that's why they cluster in their little enclaves. I'm so glad I got away from all those people. If Astrid ever comes back to me, she'll never have to put up with her parents if she doesn't wish to. I want to build a whole new life for us, and I want her to live anywhere in the world she wants to live, Charlie said, his voice thick with emotion. Alex raised his glass to Charlie. You know, I always thought it was a pity the two of you didn't get married the first time around. You and Astrid let my parents scare you off too easily then. I swear to you, if I knew where Astrid was, you'd be the first person to know. But my sister is a smart girl. She knows how to disappear, and she knows where everyone's likely to be looking for her. If I were you, I'd be looking in all the unlikeliest places, rather than all her old haunts or cities where her best friends are. After seeing Alex off, Charlie went back to his suite and found that the butler had already performed the turn-down service. The shades were drawn, and the television was set on the channel with New Age music playing softly. He threw off his shoes, unbuttoned his shirt, and sank into the bed. After dialing room service to order a hamburger, he reached into his pocket and took out the letter that Astrid wrote to him from Paris, reading it yet again. As Charlie stared at the words, the glow coming from the flat-screen TV at the foot of the bed shined through the piece of paper, and Charlie saw for the first time something on the heavy stationery that he'd never noticed before. Near the bottom right corner was a faint watermark with a distinctive ornate monogram pattern. D.S.A. It suddenly occurred to Charlie that while the envelope had been from the Hotel George V in Paris, the letter itself was written on someone else's expensive custom stationery. Who in the world was D.S.A.? On a lark, Charlie decided to call his friend Janice in Hong Kong, who was one of those people who seemed to know everybody on the planet.
Charlie, I can't believe it's you. It's been ages.
Janice purred into the phone.
Yes, it's been much too long.
Listen, I'm trying to solve a little mystery here.
Ooh, I love a good mystery.
I have a piece of monogram stationery, and I'm trying to figure out who it belongs to. I was wondering if you might be able to help.
Can you send me a snapshot? I'll circulate it to everyone I know.
Well, this needs to be kept private, if you don't mind.
Okay, not everyone then. Just a few key people.
Janice laughed. I'll take a picture and send it to you right now, Charlie said. He hung up his phone, got out of bed, and threw open the window shades. The setting sun streamed into the room, almost blinding him for a moment as he held the letter against the window pane. He took a few pictures and sent the sharpest image to Janice. Just then, the doorbell rang. Charlie went to the door and looked out the peephole. It was room service with his burger. As he opened the door to let the uniformed waiter in with his trolley, his phone began to ring again. He saw that it was Janice calling and rushed to pick it up.
Charlie, this is your lucky day. I thought I would have to send your picture around, but I recognized that monogram from a mile away. I know those initials well.
Really? Who is it?
There is only one DSA in the whole world that matters, and that's Diego San Antonio.
Who is Diego San Antonio?
He's one of the leading social figures in the Philippines. He's the host with the most in Manila.
Charlie turned to the waiter just as he was lifting the silver dome to reveal a delicious, juicy burger. Actually, I'm going to need that to go. Chapter 4 Tyersal Park, Singapore. Rachel and her best friend Peck Lin stood on the veranda, looking at the figure of Nick in the distance as he disappeared into a wooded part of the garden. He's been like this for the past week, going off for walks on his own in the afternoons. I think he's saying goodbye to the place in his own way, Rachel said. Is there nothing more that can be done? Picklin asked. Rachel shook her head sadly. No, we already agreed to sell yesterday. I know it makes no sense, since we've just come into a huge windfall. But my heart still hurts for Nick. It's like I'm in sync with his every emotion.
I wish I could find someone I could be in sync with like that. Picklin sighed.
I thought there was some secret new Mr. Perfect you promised to tell me about when the time was right.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought I'd finally met a guy who wasn't intimidated by me, but like all the other losers, he disappeared with no explanation.
I'm sorry.
Picklin leaned on the veranda railing and squinted into the afternoon sun.
Sometimes I feel like it would be far easier not to tell guys that I went to Stanford. That I run a huge property development company. That I actually love what I do.
Picklin, that's total bullshit, and you know it. If a guy can't handle exactly who you are, then he clearly doesn't deserve you. Rachel scoffed.
Damn right he doesn't. Now let's go get smashed. Where do they keep the vodka around here?
Picklin asked.
Rachel led Picklin back into her bedroom and showed her a small button by the bedside wall.
Now here's one thing I'm really going to miss about Tyersal Park. You press this button, and a bell rings downstairs somewhere, and before you can even count to 10...
Suddenly, there was a soft knock on the door, and a young maid entered the room with a curtsy.
Yes, Mrs. Young?
Hi, Tia Yi. We'd like some drinks. Can we have 2 vodka martinis on the rocks?
Extra olives, please, Picklin added.
Nick walked down the pathway past the lily pond, entering the deepest part of the woods in the northwest section of the property. When he was a boy, this was the area of the estate he never dared to venture into, probably because one of the old Malay servants from ages past had told him this was where all the tree spirits lived, and they should be left undisturbed. A bird, high in one of the trees, made a strange piercing call that Nick had never heard before. And he looked up into the thick foliage, trying to spot what it was. Suddenly, a blur of white flickered past his eyes, startling him for a second. Collecting himself, he saw it again, something white and shiny on the other side of a grove of trees. He crept slowly toward the trees, and as the bushes cleared, he saw the figure of Ah Ling facing a large tembusu tree,
clutching a few joss sticks. As she prayed and bowed from the waist repeatedly, the smoke from the joss sticks wafted around her, and her white blouse would shimmer as it caught the rays of sunlight filtering through the low-hanging branches. When Ah Ling was finished with her prayers, she took the joss sticks and stuck them inside an old Milo can that had been placed in the hollow of the bark. She turned around and smiled when she caught sight of Nick.
"I didn't know you came out here to pray. I always thought you did your prayers in the garden behind the service wing," Nick said.
"I go to different places to pray. This is my special tree, when I really want my prayers to be answered," Ah Ling said in Cantonese.
"If you don't mind me asking, who do you pray to here?"
"Sometimes to ancestors, sometimes to the monkey god, and sometimes to my mother."
It occurred to Nick that Ah Ling had seen her mother less than a dozen times since she had moved to Singapore as a teenager. Suddenly, the memory of one day from his childhood came rushing back. He remembered going into Ah Ling's bedroom and seeing her stuff a suitcase full of things. McVitie's digestive biscuits, Roundtree's sweets, packs of Lux soap, a few cheap plastic toys. And when he asked her what these were for, Ah Ling told him they were gifts for her family. She was going back to China for a month to visit them. Nick had thrown a tantrum, not wanting her to go. Decades had passed since that day, but now Nick stood in the middle of a forest with his nanny, overwhelmed with guilt. This was a woman who had dedicated nearly her entire life to serving his family, leaving her own parents and siblings behind in China, and only seeing them once every few years when she had saved up enough to go back. Ah Ling, Ah Ching, the head chef, Jacob the gardener, Ahmad the chauffeur, all these people had served his family for most of their lives. This was their home, and now they were about to lose it too. Now he was letting them all down. As if reading his mind, Ah Ling came over and put her hand on his face.
"Don't look so sad, Nicky. It's not the end of the world."
Suddenly, tears began to spring from his eyes uncontrollably. Ah Ling embraced him in the way she had so many times when he cried as a child, stroking the back of his head as he wept quietly against her shoulder. Nick hadn't shed a single tear during the entire week of his grandmother's funeral, and now he was letting it all out. After he had recovered himself, Nick walked quietly next to Ah Ling along the wooded pathway. When they reached the lily pond, they sat on the stone bench at the water's edge, watching a lone egret as it stepped gingerly among the shallow marshes looking for little minnows. Nick asked, "Do you think you'll stay in Singapore?"
"I think I will go back to China, for a year at least. I want to build a house in my old village and spend a little time with my family. My brothers are getting older. I have so many new grandnephews and grandnieces who I have never met. Now, I can finally be the rich old auntie who spoils them."
Nick chuckled at the thought. "I'm so glad Ama provided for you in her will."
"Your Ama was very generous to me, and I will always be grateful to her. For the first few decades I worked here, she frightened me to death. She was not the easiest woman to please. But I think in the last 20 years or so, she came to see me as a friend, and not just a servant. Did I ever tell you that a few years ago she invited me to take a room in the big house? She thought I was getting a bit old to be trudging back and forth from the servants' wing to the house, but I turned her down. I wouldn't feel comfortable in one of those grand bedrooms."
Nick smiled, remaining silent.
"You know, Nicky, I really don't think your grandmother wanted this house to go on after she was gone. That's why she prepared things the way she did. She wouldn't have taken care of me and Ah Ching and everyone else like she did. She thought of every detail."
"She may have thought of every detail, but for me,
So many questions remain unanswered. I keep beating myself up about how stubborn I was, refusing to come back to make peace with her until the very end. I wasted